Blog Talk Radio.
The Black Keys, or the half of a song by the Black Keys. Anyways, this is your Mother's Medicine Cabinet, brought to you by the Literary Underground and two people or 500 people that run it. Next week, our guest is going to be the fabulous Bill Gaynor, one of my new favorites that I was turned on to his poetry over in San Francisco. And anyways, but tonight our guest is a porn master extraordinaire, adult diaper wearing extraordinaire, and creator of Zygote and the coffee, and my coffee, Brian Fugier. So let's bring him on. Hello?
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, yeah. Just so you know, I prefer to go by Brian W. Fugier now, because I am a really serious artist, and I think it really gives me a lot more credibility, adding that middle initial with the dot. So from now on, please refer to me as Brian W. UJ. Thank you very much.
Or not Brian, not Brian WWW. UJ.
Well, that's the next step, I reckon. I could make a lot of money off of that, I bet, doing some private shows for people. But, hey, you know, I'm feeling a little clammy, a little lightheaded, Frank, but, you know, your voice is angelic, and it's calming me down, so, yeah.
Have your kids brought home illnesses from school and given them to you? Is that why you're clammy?
No, I'm clammy because I have not masturbated yet today. So, you know, I get a little I get a little shaky and shit, you know, like if I don't masturbate or have my vodka. But anyhow, yeah. So thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it. I really do.
No poetry grenades tonight.
No poetry grenades. No, man. I'm drinking poetry bombs, motherfucker. That's what I'm drinking right now.
So why don't you explain to the listening audience how you create a poetry bomb or grenade?
Oh, poetry grenade. Oh, basically, yes. This is something I like to smuggle into every poetry reading I've ever been to and ever will go to and be a part of. Basically, what you do is you you get a bunch of little 16-ounce, Diet Pepsis, pour half of it out, fill the rest of it up with, 90-proof rot gut vodka, and put the lid back on, shake it up, take it to the reading, sneak it in, you can go to coffee houses, wherever, you know, even if they don't serve alcohol. And you go, you know, it's a nice, relaxed, cool buzz feeling, you know, while you read your poetry, you know, read your poetry and do your thing and just feel good. Thing is, the reason they got the whole grenade moniker is because when you open them, half the time they really do explode. You open it and it's like, whoosh, and it just goes all over the fucking place. You need to stop smoking there, buddy. That cough sounds bad.
I think I coughed once, but okay. I think that when I was with you in the Berkeley house there, and we stayed for the whole week and we were intoxicated and read poems for a week, that you must have consumed more vodka than John Bonham did when he died. So I've never seen another person consume that much vodka and sleep about 2 hours a night. Were you drunk 7 days straight?
Oh, more than that. I mean, you consider the train ride there 3 days, drunk the whole time. 7 days straight there. And then, you know, another 3 days back on the train. So we're talking almost 2 weeks, man. Straight. But, you know, the ironic thing is, my deodorant at the time, just it smelled like straight vodka. It's like I put it on, it's like I'm just rubbing vodka up on my armpits, you know.
Oh, shit. So how long does it take when you get home to cleanse the liver?
Oh, the liver. It's never cleansed. It just kind of keeps expanding like a little tiny beach ball. You know, someone like blowing right into a beach ball, you know. Someday I'm sure it's going to explode just like a poetry grenade. Hopefully it's not live on stage and I hit myself and scare the hell out of everyone.
So would you have been to do the famous reading you did wearing adult diapers if there was no poetry grenades?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's pretty much me. That's me. That's the kind of stuff I like to do. I like to perform. You know, if you're going to go to a live poetry reading, it's my opinion that you need to perform and have fun. Go up there, have fun. Everyone needs to have fun. You know, I may make me sound like a dick, but I am a dick. But, you know, it bores me when people go up there and stand there and just go, blah, 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 into the mic, you know, and I start nodding off and, like, you know, not paying attention, you know. It's like, get up there, perform, do it. You know, some people who are really good at performing, Paul Coleman Roberts, and Bill Gaynor, too. You mentioned Bill Gaynor next week. Wonderful performer. He goes up there, you know, his whole shtick is like 80%, you know, stand-up comedy and then, you know, 100% more of just kick-ass poetry. You know, he's a great poet. He's a great performer. Get there and perform, you know. Bill Gaynor's a great example, Paul Coleman Roberts. And even Michael Grover at times, I've seen him. He gets up there and he performs, you know. You need to engage the audience, I think, honestly.
So what brought on the famous adult, because it is famous and world known now, that you performed a night of poetry wearing an adult diaper. Nothing
uh-huh.
but an adult diaper. So where did such ideas come from?
Well, you know, basically, that's the kind of ideas that are, like, zipping around my head, like, constantly. You should see the stacks and stacks of sloppy notebooks and stuff I have. Every time I get an idea, I jot it down. Like, oh, man, this is funny. I need to write this shit down. You know, oh, man, this is funny, or this is cool. I got to write it down. I mean, that's just the way it is. My mind is constantly, like, working, like, 100,000 miles a minute all the time, and it's almost maddening. That's probably why I don't sleep much.
Yeah, you did sleep.
What's that?
I am a witness to the fact that you don't sleep. You'd be up about 6 hours after I went to bed, and you'd be up before. Like, I don't know how you did it.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting told for that shit. It's going to kill me. It's going to kill me probably within the next 5 to 10 years. But you know what? Hopefully I'm on stage live when it happens. That'll be the ultimate performance. Yeah, just drop dead, liver explodes on stage, shit myself.
That would be very cool, man. But hey, if that's the way you want to go out, I'm sure with the way you eat too, it's not going to be any good either.
Yeah, I subsist on a daily diet of wheat toast. I mean, even, you know, there in Berkeley, and even now, you know, wheat toast.
That pizza in Berkeley was like an oasis.
Absolutely.
That one pizza we got to have was a. But unlike you, me and Swainbo, we went for breakfast around the corner every morning and nourished ourselves.
I went there once or twice. There was a nice little cafe around the corner from the house, yeah. Well, that was a good time, wasn't it? Are you going to Beast Crawl this next July? It's coming up again.
I definitely want to go then. I mean, that's
awesome.
Way far enough out to know. Like, I'd actually like to even, like, try to get out on a train because I also have a putrid fear of flying like you do, but I guess I'm embarrassed a little more than you. I'd like to go out to Seattle because it's only, like, a state away because there's some people out there, like Snellman and shit are out there, and I'm sure some could be set out there for a weekend. That's something
I
look forward to do.
You know, if you're going to ride the train, let me know, man, because I love it, man. I'd love to ride the train with you. I could be your caboose. But anyhow.
All right.
You know what? You mentioned Snellman, Ryan Snellman. I had the honor of finally meeting him live in person in Albuquerque, and he's a fun guy, man. Really like him a lot.
Yeah, so. He's a good guy. Like I met him in Kansas City in 2008, but I think I think he was scared of us because, you know, it was like me, Wanberg, S.A. Griffin, Reberg, Iris Applequist, just a ton of us, Jason Neese, and we had like just a 3-day event, and he was there, and every time there was an after party, he just, like, took off to his hotel. I think we frightened him.
Oh. Well,
like, I don't know.
That's not the Ryan Snellman I encountered in Albuquerque. He was there for all the after parties, and he was pretty damn fun. He really was. Had a great time meeting him and hearing him read and just hanging out in general. You know, that's part of the fun for me, too, with this whole, you know, well, I don't know what you call it, scene. I don't know. It's going to these live events and meeting people face-to-face, you know, people that you've been communicating with for years and years, you know, over the Internet or on Facebook or some other social network, and, you know, really making that live connection. And that to me, means a lot, you know. And I've made
it
was, big line
it must have been It must have been awesome meeting Ellie Portnoy, too. I enjoyed her when I met her a few years back.
My gosh, she is a riot, man. She was cracking me up so much. Oh, yeah. Ellie, yeah. Unfortunately, I cannot say her last name correctly. Portnoy?
Portnoy.
I'm terrible.
Think
with names.
Of like a ship in the port and then add the word Noy at the end.
All right. Portnoy. You hear that, Ellie? Ellie, baby? You listening?
I am taking you into sixth grade. Think of a ship and at.
That's the kind of guidance I need. Thank you, Frankie. Real done.
Okay, so I'm going to ask a serious question number one, and then we can move to some silliness if you'd like again. Tell us the birth and what came along and how the zygote all came about.
The birth, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, man, wait, you present the question itself, you know, zygote birth, you know. It's hard for me to take that serious, but, well, I'm feeling a little clammy and lightheaded, Frank, but your voice is angelic. Thanks for asking the question, but, no, seriously, man, you know, it all started, I mean, you know, I've been writing for years, and, you know, there was... mostly, you know, was getting published initially in print zines, and I just started getting, like, hip to the whole computer stuff around 2002, and there was a print zine I got published in, and it had, like, advertisements in the back for online stuff. I'm like, online zines, you know, literature, blah, blah, blah. So I started, in the first place, with Babel Magazine. I don't know if you remember that. Magazine, it was pretty big back in, like, 2001, 2002. So I got into that, and it was really good. And it was publishing a lot of the people, like, you know, R.C. Edrington, John Dorsey, J.J. Campbell, you know, all these people. And I was like, wow, these people are good. This is the kind of stuff I like. So I really got into it. I started getting published in there, and all of a sudden it went belly up, and they just said, you know, we're done, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, holy shit, like, there's just, like, this huge void. I was like, oh, man, I need to fill this void. And I was living out in California at the time. I was like, man, you know, I need to fill this void. So I created Zygo My Coffee. And the title Zygo My Coffee is based off of a one-act play I wrote back in 2002. It's all about a guy whose hand gets impregnated by a zygote that had been spontaneously aborted from a barista in a, you know, Starbucks. But anyhow, you know, if I want to fill this void and start my own zine, you know, I want it to be a little offbeat, a little different, a little fun, kind of like this Babel magazine was. And I thought, all right, well, I'll just call it Zygo My Coffee. So I started it, and it caught on, and blah, blah, blah. So, and pretty much that was the birth of it. I mean, that was back in, like, San Jose, like, way back in. I mean, I started working on it in probably October of 2003, and then it finally came out, like, December of 2003. So been at this shit for quite a long time in story.
So we've got our first caller.
Oh, boy, a caller, huh?
From the 419 area code.
I'll answer any questions. Throw them at me, people.
You're on the air.
What the hell are you talking about, DJ?
What the hell am I talking about? What the hell are you talking about?
What the hell
are
you traveling about? It's Grover, man. What's going on?
Well, hello, Grover. Nice to meet you.
No, I'm not the blue guy from Sesame.
I'm sorry.
No.
Oh, not that Grover. Okay. Oh, this is Michael Grover.
Yeah. What's going on?
I don't know. I'm just sitting here on this talk radio show, man. Glad you called in. You have a question for me, motherfucker.
Yeah, what the hell are you talking about, man? You're like, babbling about this stuff, huh?
Babbling about stuff, man. Everything I say is important. You know who the fuck I am? I'm Brian W. Dot.
I know who you are.
You just... All right.
Exactly,
you know what?
Who you are.
I'm only taking serious fucking questions because I'm a serious poet, all right?
Well, I know, yeah. You're a very serious guy.
No, I am. People underestimate my seriousness. I don't think I'd be doing this Zygote My Coffee, Can Coffee Press for this long if I wasn't serious about it. But, all right. Well, Grover, you know what?
Right.
What do you want from me right now? You know, you know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to open up Anne Frank's diary. I'm going to just pick a page, a random page, and I'm going to read half of it, and I'm going to, I got some children's ibuprofen, and I'm going to...
Well, why don't you read your own writing?
Huh? My own writing? Oh, well, whatever you guys want. I'm willing to do it.
Don't mess with the kid's medicine, man. The kids might need it.
I would like to mention that the next book coming out from Santa Coffee Press here at the end of the month, coming in late November, early December here, is called Up Against the Poetry Establishment by Ross T. Runzla. He's a great poet, and it's going to be a really cool book, about 72 pages approximately or whatever, and...
I met Ross at the Zygo thing in Cleveland. He's a great guy, too.
Yeah. I mean, I'd known him before that, but that was the first time I met him in person, too, up in Cleveland back in 2008. Yeah. His shitless poem is the best, and I would love to read his shitless poem because it's, like, one of the main poems.
He just doesn't like Bunsen, that guy.
Well... Bunsen's a good guy. I like Bunsen. But, they had some sort of static going on there.
Bunsen's a good guy.
Like Bunsen. Okay, we're talking about Bunsen burners and other shit. All right. So, you guys got some serious fucking questions for me here. I'm a very serious guy. You know, my time is very important.
Very valuable, I know.
All right, sweet baby Jesus. You guys just want me to read something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, read
something. Read something?
Forget the Anne Frank diary, though, man. Read.
Fuck it. I'm going to read a little bit of Anne Frank's diary. Just, I'm going to spontaneously open up a page here.
You can
read
a little
bit of it.
Bola.
Wednesday, 10 March, 1943. Dear Kitty, we had a short ticket last evening. And on top of that, the guns kept banging away all the time. I still haven't got over my fear of everything connected with shooting and planes. Like creeping in Daddy's bed nearly every night in comfort. I know it's very childish, but you don't know what it's like.
What's
the AA guns roar so loudly that you can't
like
hear yourself. Mrs. Van Dam, the fatalist, was nearly crying and said in a very timid little voice, oh, it's so unpleasant. Oh, the shooting's so hard. But what she really means is, I'm so frightened because I'm a big cock in fucking poem. That was Anne Frank. Thank you very much. Straight from her goddamn diary. I'm a bastard. I'm going to hell, I know.
I don't think she talked like that.
I don't know how she talked. Maybe she talked with a German accent or something. I don't know. Maybe she wasn't.
Maybe she just...
Yeah, that was a historically inaccurate reading.
Well, you
maybe
know...
Maybe she just spoke German.
Well, I'm a historically inaccurate person.
Translated.
But, all right, you guys really want me to read something real? No, this is something that was something of my own here, and it was recently published. And this, you know, people like to say this, but this is true. This is a true story. This is based on something that really happened in my past. I don't know if you guys are aware of my sordid past, but... the title of this piece is Red October. I will read it now, and I will be very serious, because this is my work, and I'm more important than Anne Frank ever will be. Clear my throat. Yes, okay, seriousness. Red October by Brian W. Dodd, DJ. I was well into my third beer when I noticed her giving me the proverbial once-over at the Halloween party. She was a 5'3" brunette dressed as Frank Miller's version of Robin the Boy Wonder and was endowed with an immaculate pair of 36 C's that pressed out the little R logo on her shirt like a cinematic 3D effect. She smiled, exhaled a plume of cigarette smoke, then started to grind against my crotch as the dance music thumped and rattled my internal organs. You like? You want to make fuck with me? She asked with a stilted Russian accent. What? I asked, not quite believing what I heard. My cunt's wetter than Lake Erie, she whispered into my ear. Her vodka-tainted breath giving me goosebumps. She took my hand and led me down to a room in the basement. The room was pitch black. She pushed me onto a mattress and told me to strip naked. Needless to say, I complied. A pair of stifled giggles circulated the darkness as I removed my clothes, one female, the other male. A small desk lamp suddenly flicked on. I got an idea, said the large man seated in the corner. Why don't you two have sex while I watch? Pardon me, I asked, squinting in his direction. Any buzz, horniness, and cool vibes I had going were squashed into oblivion. I was scared shitless. It's no fucking joke. I'm not sure I understand. What does you understand? I want to watch you and the girl fuck, he said, his voice tinged with a Slavic slur. All I could see of him was that Neanderthal gaze and the meaty hands working his penis like a wad of silly putty. The hammer and sickle tattoo on his forearm fluttered about like an old Soviet flag as the video camera nestled on the tripod next to him, stared relentlessly with his unblinking red eye. End motherfucking story. True story! True story!
No, I saw Lake Erie the other day, and that's pretty wet.
But, yeah. A few minor embellishments with, you know, a couple things here, but basically a true story. Yeah. I do live in the swinging capital of the U.S. of A., so, you know.
Oh, yeah, I've been there. It was just a swinging town.
Oh,
Is Dayton really the swingers capital of USA?
Well, at one point back, about 10 years ago it was.
They have a lot of sex shops there, I'll say that.
Yeah, yeah, every other block is like a sex shop or a church. Church, sex shop. Sex shop, church. It's very, almost surreal. I mean, it really is. So surreal, I wrote a poem about it. And I'd like to read it right now.
Okay.
Alrighty. Here we go. It is called Peristalsis in the Bowels of Downtown. This is all about my experiences on Fifth Street, downtown Dayton, Ohio. And Grofer's actually kind of witnessed some of Fifth Street, a little piece of it. So Peristalsis in the Bowels of Downtown. All up and down Fifth Street, there are peep shows, coffee shops, liquor stores, and fresh tattoos that glow on the pale February bleached flesh of girls. And all the skinny caramel lattes are clutched too tight, even though they are hotter than the August pavement. And everywhere you go along East 3rd Street, the cell phones are screaming to the relief from all of the pockets, purses, and glove compartment coffins, while a roving pack of mimes stalk the corner of 4th and Main, peddling thespian nightmares in a symphony of silence so loud it sounds like propaganda. And all the yellow slowly leaks from the sun as I sit in the cafe across the street, murdering myself one cigarette at a time. In motherfucking pole. Later. Thank you very much.
Well. On that,
that's the street
we
were walking on. What is Jimmy Hill here now?
Yeah, what's going on here? Someone needs to turn their cell phone down.
That was Benny Hill.
Benny Hill?
The Benny Hill theme
fucking
song.
Fucking English comedians, I tell you.
So, Brian, what does the future hold for the zygote?
What does the future hold?
Yeah,
mighty zygote.
That's a wonderful question. I wish I could answer it, but who knows, you know? Like I said, you know, the next upcoming book, we got by Ross T. Runkle Against the Poetry Establishment, and shortly after that will be Zygote Print Edition number 10 coming out, which is pretty much done and ready for print. And I got a couple other books coming up from, you know, Paul Corman Roberts, Amy DeLong, and Mr. Michael Grover himself. Pretty much got a full slate as far as the print books go. And, you know, of course, we got the ongoing online edition. And, you know, Zygote and My Radio will be new season of Zygote My Radio will be coming up shortly within the next month here, probably in December.
What will take place on the Zygote My Radio show?
Oh, well, we like to talk about all kinds of wonderful things, very, you know, explicit things, very essential things that are relevant socially and, you know.
You had me calling and act like I was like a swinger expert.
Well, I am an expert in a lot of things, but, yeah. So, yeah, that, in a nutshell, that's what we got coming up here. Like, I can't really be any more specific than that at this point, but, yeah.
You still playing that far ahead?
I'm sorry, what?
You still playing that far ahead?
Do I plan that far ahead? Well, yeah, I got shit mapped out, man. You should see my walls, man. Right. I got maps everywhere.
I've seen your wall. But I haven't seen them recently. I guess the web maps are a recent thing.
Hello?
Did we lose somebody?
No.
Okay.
All right, well, Frank, Mr. Frank Reardon, when is motherfucking Nirvana Kurt Cobain haymaker punch thing going to come out, buddy? Just kind of curious.
I just went over the final layout of the book yesterday or the day before. They're finishing up the cover, and it should be off to the printer, so it should be out here in a couple of weeks.
Excellent. Excellent. You've been teasing that with, you know, teasing us with that for quite some months now, man. I'm getting all tingly just thinking about it. So I look forward to
that.
Well,
it's gone through like three or four different phases. Like it, like a
right.
year and a half ago, it was a completely different book, and I just totally mm-hmm. scratched it. And you know, I was pulling a Brian Wilson on the world. Nothing was good enough, so I had to keep changing
that
it.
That happens, I know. You know, I've been editing and publishing for like a decade now. I know how it goes, man. And I'm a writer, too.
Oh, we're fickle like that.
Fickle. Yes, all fickle. Fickle little bastards. All of you.
So, any future poetry grenades coming up for you there, Brian?
Any future poetry grenades?
Well, will you be making poetry grenades on Thanksgiving?
Oh, that's a motherfucking given, dude.
Poetry grenades everywhere.
Good Lord. Yeah, that's just a given. Yeah, especially on holidays and shit, you know, when you got to tolerate.
We were hanging out in the shop, you drinking poetry grenades.
Yep, hanging out, drinking poetry grenades, watching pornography. That's a lot
right.
of a nutshell.
Drinking poetry grenades right next to your big picture of Swainbo.
oh boy, good old Swainbo. I like him. He's a good guy.
Yes, no shitting on Swainbo, but that was the most funniest thing in the world when you came up with Swainbo in Berkeley.
Well, it was all inspired by you that. This is ground, or wait, this is Jesus Christ, it's in Tebow. That's that whole, and it just seemed like
yeah.
a natural fit to have, you know, Swainbo, because, you know, he's so goddamn handsome with that fancy little mop top of hair he's got. All the girls, you know, all the girls go gaga over him, you know?
With his,
he could probably write a poem about a refrigerator sitting in the middle of, dirty lot or something, grass lot, and girls would just swoon because, you know, he's just such a handsome bastard.
How he takes off his glasses in slow motion.
That's the only way I take my glasses off, slow motherfucking motion.
No,
but
you just sleep with your glasses on.
Sometimes I do, and that's not good. I'll wake up and it'll be all, like, crammed up against my nose and crooked and fucked up, but yeah, you know, what's funny is poetry wasn't and isn't my number one influence, to be honest. You know, I've always been more into plays, I think, and plays and screenplays. I mean, I know you're getting more into fiction now, aren't you, Frank? I mean, yourself, or you getting a little burned out on the poetry?
Well, I've got the third book coming out next year from Punk Hostage, and when I finish editing it, I just want to work on prose for a while. But, you know, it doesn't mean that if a poem comes along that I'm not going to write it. But
oh, right.
I'm putting putting my effort into writing prose novels, like,
right.
for a little while.
Oh,
you
got to
switch
yeah,
it up a bit, man. It's just, I don't know. I love doing it. I always love writing poetry, but you just got to change it once in a while because I can't play damn guitar and I sure as hell can't paint a picture, so I got to do something else.
Yeah, we aren't all as talented as good old Jason G. Harding with his beautiful fucking painting and all that. I'd make cartoons,
no,
but I can't paint like that guy. Man,
I've got one of his paintings hanging in my house. Really
oh,
like
I still
it.
Have one in my office, the Charles Manson.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Charles Manson one. Yeah.
Wait,
did you just say that you
had an office?
I do. I have an office upstairs in my
house.
You
both have an office.
I have
what
a big office.
What do you
do I have, like, what, three or four printers in there, a scanner, and a couple of cutting boards. And downstairs I have my binding machine where I bind my freaking books and get high off the glue.
Oh, so you make those books yourself? You don't send them to a printer?
Right. So it's like it's twice the work. Yeah. I get them all laid out and everything, and then I print them and bind them myself. It's a lot of work.
Because they're pretty good-looking books. They look professionally made.
Well, I am a motherfucking professional.
Because you're professional. I've seen Brian's setup. Where's a good setup?
I'm trying to give you props here, Brian Fugier. No need to laugh in my face and mock me.
I do not mock
you. That's Brian's way.
What is the next, are you writing any more plays?
Am I? Oh, yeah, yeah. I have several in the works. I eventually hope to publish the little short one-act play, Zygote My Coffee, that actually inspired the title for, you know, the zine, Zygote My Coffee, here within the next 6 months or so. I hope, you know, to get that published. It's a funny little piece, kind of dialogue driven.
Are you going to act in the one man play?
Oh yes, I have a one act play prepped, actually, and I had it ready, and I had puppets with me and everything when I was in Albuquerque. You know, of course, I was like MC and host for the two little shows there, and I just, you know, I put myself in as filler in case somebody didn't show up. We don't have enough time, but of course, you know, we always get poets can go on and on, so I didn't have time. But yeah, it's called A Girl and Her Puppet, and have all kinds of props set for that and a puppet. So I hope to perform that sometime live on stage. It's called A Girl and Her Puppet, and it's a little, really short, like probably about 2.5-page little mini play or whatever. But you know, some of my biggest influences as far as playwrights go, you know, it has to be like David Mamet, I'd say, Edward Albee, Harold Pinter, David Ives. I don't know if you're familiar with any of these playwrights or whatever, but yeah, they've had a huge influence on me. And Sarah Kane, her stuff is so bizarre and off the wall. And her last book was called Psychosis, like 4-point-something, I can't remember. It was all about, she had been institutionalized, and she wrote this while she was institutionalized, and then she killed herself. And that one was published, like, posthumously, you know? It's like, wow. But her stuff is great. It's off the wall and weird. And another big influence has been, I don't know if you're familiar with Eugene Ionesco. He is a French playwright. His stuff is very off the wall, very different. Love it.
You ever read an Mary Baraka play?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you ever read an Mary Baraka play?
Did I ever? I can't hear you. What? Read what?
Have you ever read an Mary Baraka play?
Have I ever read an Mary Box before?
Baraka play.
Barack Obama play?
Baraka. No, a Mary Baraka. Have you ever read one of his plays?
A Harry Chewbacca play?
Yeah, Harry Chewbacca
play. I read Harry Chewbacca.
Mike Grover, are you talking about Leroy Jones?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's the one.
No, can't say I have. But I do perform Harry Chewbacca plays every day when I engage in the internet porn. Reckon I need to shave that little Wookiee. I need to shave that Wookiee.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So where did all this love for plays and literature start? Did this start as a child?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I think, I think when I was probably about, I'd say 11, 12 years old, I started having these, like, god-awful, terrible panic attacks. I mean, just, there was like 6-7 times a day, I felt like I was dying, just completely dying. And my mom and dad kind of got me into reading and writing a lot. And I found that writing gave me this sense of, I don't know, control, I should say, so I didn't feel so out of control, like I was dying all the time. I'm being totally serious right now, seriously. I mean, this is, it was debilitating.
No, I believe you. I know exactly what you're talking about. Go ahead.
And so I guess it came out of that. So I started reading a lot, writing a lot, and it gave me some sense of control over, you know, everything. So I didn't feel like I was, you know, 100% insane or dying. This was back in the 80s. Nobody knew what panic attacks were or all that shit, you know. I mean, they were like, I would tell my parents and be like, man, I just don't feel weird. You know, I don't feel right. I feel weird. And it would be weird. Like, I felt like my mind and everything was outside of my body. Like, I was looking at myself from the outside in, and, you know, like, lights up overhead and shit would sound, like, really loud, and weird things would look up close, like a little piece of lint would just set it off, or a light, or just, it was so, so bizarre. And so I started getting into, believe it or not, William Burroughs, because some of his stuff was kind of just extremely conscious and surreal, and that's the way I felt. I felt like, oh my God, I don't feel real. I feel like, you know, I'm living in a dream half the time. And so, you know, I started writing, you know, stream of consciousness stuff, which led to poetry, and then I got into the plays and all that, and screenwriting, because my dad was really into films and all that, and he got me into film. And eventually I went to film school for a couple of years on top of that. But, I think it started when I was probably about 12 years old when the panic attack set in, and like I said, basically in a nutshell, it gave me a sense of control. And so I'm still
now. And now you control the panic attacks with poetry grenades.
I don't get the panic attacks anymore. I got to a certain age, and it stopped. Every once in a while, I'll have, like, you know, a little anxiety attack and panic attack, but it's not like like it was when I was in my teens and early 20s, man. It's like my early 20s, it suddenly just stopped. And I don't know why. Kind of weird.
Maybe it was having women play with the Andy Griffith.
Yeah, that could be a plus too. Yeah, yeah, you get a little self confidence. Women start stroking your Andy Griffith instead of you stroking your own Andy Griffith. God damn it, feels good, you know. But yeah, no doubt. But yeah. That's it, man. I mean, that's where it started. That's how it started. So, ta-da.
Oh.
Hmm?
Why don't you read another piece?
Another piece of what?
Of not and Frank.
Shit.
Read something of your own.
Something of my own? Oh, boy.
Or something from your Zygote catalog that you like that might not be yours.
Oh, I'm just going to randomly open up to a page here. The English accent's coming out. Oh, boy. All right. Here's one. It's called Vicious Wishes. Vicious Wishes by Brian W. UJ. There's something oddly attractive about Zoe. Perhaps it's the way she carefully arranges the angular, geometric features of her face, on her head, every detail slightly askew and a bit asymmetrical, like a real-life, living, breathing, flesh-toned rendition of a Picasso painting, always making vicious wishes with that vicious gaze while engaging you in her cryptic Ouija board conversations in fucking poems. Like a much.
Do you remember in the 70s and the early 80s, there was that Major League Baseball pitcher named Bill Spaceman Lee?
No, I don't recall.
Yeah, I was a Montreal Expos fan.
Yeah, he was crazy, man. I'm just going to start calling you Brian Spaceman Fugier because you're just out of this world, man. You're no longer Dunning Duck. You're just the Spaceman because you're just crazy, but it's good. We need more crazy people.
See, that's the thing, though. I feel normal, and I think other people who are just kind of going through the motions every day, crazy to me. Maybe I don't am
no,
crazy. I don't think I'm crazy.
I think as a group of artists, like if you take Facebook or, for example, and all the people you've met on Facebook and all the different writers that write the different styles and stuff like that, anywhere from New York City to Los Angeles and in between, and all the different styles and all the different things that people and we have to say, I think what it boils down to is what you said. You know, we all see a majority of things that are different than us. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know. So, yeah, that was my serious comment for the minute. But I think it's like, I think it's true. It's just everybody's just got a different brand of crazy or normalness or whatever.
Whatever, you know, society wants to label it, I think, yeah, you know.
How about labels? There's no money in poetry, and it's funny that sometimes that, like me, you know, you're older than me, Mike's older than me, but I'm approaching 40 in a year and a half now, and sometimes it's fun to see the 20-year-olds or the 22-year-olds come on to the, you see at readings or on Facebook or something with the dreams of making millions as a poet, you know.
I know, their hopes and dreams and, you know, give them a dose of reality, but it's like, no. They've got to learn on their own. They're not going to listen anyways when you're in your early 20s.
Of course
you've got
to learn on your own.
Yeah.
I mean,
because they're not going to listen. They're not going to believe you.
There's money to be made. There's money to be made, but in the end, even the dead masters had to have jobs, most of them.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But, you know, the funny thing is I normally get paid $500 for every reading I go to or I MC or host. So I really do make money doing this. People don't believe it. People laugh at me. They mock me. But I'm fucking serious. I make some good money doing this shit. People have no idea.
Well,
why are they laughing at him? Brian's counting his money.
Or you could win the Pulitzer and then, you know, charge $5,000 a reading like Franz Reich gets to do.
Fuck him. You know what? I am actually going to start, you know, you got this whole push cart nomination thing. Well, Zygote My Coffee, in conjunction with the Literary Underground, is going to start the whole what's called Butch Cart nominations. And Michael Grover's already been nominated once for Butch Cart.
Yeah, that's my nomination.
So, yeah, Butch Cart. Watch what I may laugh, but
bio.
I'm serious.
What, you were starting an award called the Butch Cart?
Butch Cart nomination.
That's right.
There's a little bit of dildo action going on in there. You know, it's all Butch.
What,
but, yeah,
what
Butch
does
Cart nomination.
What, like, previous winners of the... Previous winners of the push cart are great writers sometimes, like Raymond Carver. So, and he, what would you win off the Butch cart? Can you just say, I won the Butch cart award? What do you win?
I got nominated.
You've been nominated for the Butch cart.
How many hundreds and thousands of poets, small press, big press, and whatnot have been nominated for a push cart? I think that's
they're
the funniest
nominated
thing.
Nominated by their friends.
I know that
they,
that you know
their bios like they're important or something.
See, I think it's so funny. Call me a dick because I am a dick. but the whole postcard nomination thing, I can't take it serious. You know, I get so many submissions, you know, from poets and writers, and they say, and their little bios, they like to pad their bios. The younger ones who are a little less. I've been nominated for a push cart.
I nominated somebody for a push cart last week, but it was honestly the best poem that I've gotten, that we got in Red Fez all year.
Really, Grover? You fucking poser. You nominated someone for a push cart?
Yes, I did.
I honestly believe that everybody I know on Earth that is a writer has been nominated for that award.
Not me.
Well, Well, Grover, you got a Butch card. That's even better.
But I'd have been nominated for the Butch card.
Yes, but what do you win when you win? If you win the Butch card, what happens?
Frank Rudin, I'm nominating you for a Butch card.
And what happens if you win it?
If you win, gosh darn it, I'm gonna. If somebody actually wins the Butch card, I'm gonna set it up so they get tag teamed by a couple of lesbians wearing dildos. Okay.
Oh my.
Would that be lipstick lesbians or Butch lesbians?
Well,
what's the name of the award?
What is it, Frank? Mr. Frank Reardon, lipstick lesbians or Butch lesbians? Well, what about a mix of one lipstick, one
Frank.
Butch? Well, now that
Frank
would be a fun
one.
That'd be a
Brian
fun mix. Yes.
What? What is if people want to know the listeners and there are listeners?
Mm-hmm.
No, seriously, we get a lot of fucking listeners and download an archive between me and Frankie O Metro.
Mm-hmm.
What? How can people get zygote material and stuff like that?
How do they get it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you gotta be
you
careful
know,
with your things, Frank. But no, you know, you go to www.zygoteinmycoffee.com, and we have a bookstore on there. You can order books and shit, and read all the online zines. And you know, I hope to meet a whole bunch more new people.
Do you have the Zygote My Coffee Cup?
I do have one. Yes, I do.
So if I went on there, say, in a few weeks when I got paid and I felt like drinking my coffee out of a Zygote coffee cup, you would mail to me right away.
Oh, I don't have any personal notes. I have one. I used to sell them through that years ago, that cafe press crap, whatever. I haven't messed with that in years. I got kind of like, meh. With that, but that's something, you know, I'd probably like to do again sometime, you know. Start
you should make
more
a Zygote beer koozie.
A what? Zygote what?
A Zygote beer koozie.
Hey, that's a good idea.
or a
bomb koozie.
Yes. Or you could sell your recipe online for poetry grenades.
Oh, yeah. I should start just selling, manufacturing and selling poetry grenades to the mail. You think I'd get in trouble with the Fed doing that?
Make cookbooks. Zygote cookbook.
Cookbook. Oh, yeah, there we go. Zygote cookbook. That's my next project. Wow.
Or how to get a teacup tattooed on your arm.
It's not a fucking teacup, bitch. You know that. It's a goddamn coffee. You've been hassling me about that teacup for quite some time, but not the motherfucking coffee cup. I mean, let's get this straight. I don't drink that Japanese gay green tea stuff, man.
What
not even girls. Especially not girls.
Dainty
gray.
Little
especially
teacup
not
on his arm.
Uh-oh. Oh, Grover, I haven't showed you my tattoos. Oh, dude, you missed out. Yeah, on my left upper arm, I have a coffee cup.
We were all going to get honey badger tattoos, but none of us had the money.
Yeah, I would like to have a honey badger tattooed, like, on my lower back, you know, like one of those little tramp stamps. But the only thing is, if I did that, my wife would divorce me, so I can't do that. She already told me no. She was very emphatic, right? Because I told her, like, hey, I'm thinking about getting a honey badger tattoo. And she flipped out. Oh
wow.
Yeah. She said, no, no way. So, you know, I can't get the honey badger tramp stamp. So, I was like, who's going to see it? You know? Who's going to be, you know, the person from behind to see it? Of course,
So, Brian, what does, what are
that?
You... What are you thinking about for next year's July reading? What are you going to do to top
the adult diaper reading.
I told you I've got a puppet show in store. All centered around a little short, like 3-2.5 page play called The Girl and Her Puppet. Got a couple other things up my sleeve. You know, I had this stuff already in case I had to be a filler at the two readings I hosted and emceed in Albuquerque. But yeah, I never got the opportunity.
You don't really have time to do anything else.
What's that?
Yeah, it's a lot of work to host a reading. You don't really have time to do anything else.
No, I know, but I just fill myself in as like a filler. Like if something happens, and we need to, but you know, it never happens because people always go over.
If you're the host, you should have a spot.
You know, I don't care. I prefer if I'm hosting a show, whatever. I prefer everyone else to get in there, have fun, do their thing. You know what I mean? And just, I mean, that's it. I mean, I'm not gonna impose myself. I prefer just let everyone else have the time, get in there, have fun, read their shit. But you know, I'm sure there's gonna be reading sometime here within the next couple months or so. I'm gonna get the chance to, do my thing, and it's gonna happen. And I promise it will be Titanic, maybe Titanic sinking, because that's the way I roll.
Titanic. And your adult diapers are owned by a one Missy Church, I believe.
Oh yes, the shit. Yeah, that's a funny story. The diaper I wore at the live reading in San Francisco back in July. Missy Church House actually asked me if I still had it, and I did, because I was going to try to sell it on eBay, and I happened to be at Paul Corman Roberts' house, and she came over and was hanging out, like, after the reading, like, the next day or whatever. I said, hey, do you still have that diaper? And I said, yeah. I was going to try to sell it on eBay. She said, I'd like to have it. Can I have it? And I was like, okay. I couldn't believe it. I was like, sure, you really want it? But yeah.
Whatever floats your boat.
I pulled it out of my... out of my little backpack, and gave it to her, and she, like, was holding it and rolling it between her fingers, and was like, oh, yes, I see pilling hair. It looks like you had this on for a long time. I said, yeah, I had it on for almost 24 hours. She said, did you pee in it? I said, no.
And Brian Fouché, am I correct that you were vomiting in the trash barrel in the subway station?
Affirmative. That did happen on the night after the Eve call. Probably 10 days straight of poetry grenade consumption. And the funny thing is, after the beast crawl, we were all on the BART, you know, the little subway system in San Francisco, and everyone else sat in one spot. I went off by myself, like off in a corner, just to be stupid because I was fucked up. And I was sitting there and I kept giggling like a bastard. I couldn't stop laughing, and everyone was looking at me like I was a psycho. You know, you ever go on a train like that, a subway, you know, there's always one person who's a kind of creepy, scary person. That night, I think I was the creepy, scary person. I wasn't even meaning to be. I couldn't stop laughing. So the constant motion, you know, being inebriated and the constant motion of the train and me giggling for like 15 minutes straight, I got off and was like, hey, guys, you know what? I think I'm going to puke. And it just happened to be a Big Ben right there that we got off. And, of course, Michelle McDaniel, I can't get a picture of me barfing straight into the Big Ben. But and then I was dry heaving the next morning. I think everyone heard me in the whole Berkeley house there dry heaving. I had nothing to puke at that point because, you know, I hadn't eaten in, like, days besides, like, toast. But, yeah, that doesn't happen too often, you know. I'm not much of a puke. In story.
Yeah, it was a wild week, I'll say the least.
Certainly was.
But that last day, man, I was fucking all done that last day. I was burned out, and I was trying to read poems with some stabbing Westward band setting up behind me. It was.
Oh, yeah,
annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It was pissing me off, too.
You stab him?
Right.
No, I wish I could have. I wish I could have. There's people setting up drums when I'm trying to fucking read poems, and it just made for bad reading.
So, Frank, I'm kind of curious. Frank, who are some of your, like, influences as far as, like, creatively, writers, artists, or, I mean, what got you into it? Just curious.
I started reading books as a child, like all them like Hardy Boys type shit, like, you know, when you're reading
really?
When you're a little boy, and then like I started trying
well,
to write
I read
my those own
when I was a kid.
Then I like tried to write my own short stories, like, you know, like war stories, but they always sucked because I was like 12 years old, and then like
war stories, yeah, I remember doing that too,
and
yeah.
Then I write more stories, and then I don't know, by the time I got into college I got more interested in chicks and drugs. So I stopped writing for a while, and then right around the time my daughter was born, when I was 28, I started taking it more serious. But I was like a raging alcoholic for like quite a few years. So the words weren't coming out right, and then they just got better as time goes on. They just get better, you know. You keep at it, anybody. If you keep at
right.
it, you know.
Right.
And, but I have a lot of influences, anywhere from, I mean, speaking of dead people, like, you know, anyway, from Fonte to James Wright to Raymond Carver to Bukowski to Kerouac, like all kinds of people.
Right.
And of course, like, you know, Robinson Jeffers and now, you know, there's a lot of people out there now that I like, you know, and that are around, you know. I think there's like I was talking to George Wallace last week, who was like, you know, my influences that were living were S.A. Griffin, George Wallace, David Smith, and Scott Wahlberg. Those were the guys that showed me the ropes, you know. And
right.
So when I was talking to George last week, like he just like made a lot of sense, like you know, you. I stopped drinking whiskey and stopped being a prick, like, you know, and the words started coming out easier, more focused, you know, and I don't know, like, you know, it was a joy for me to meet people like William Taylor and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you know, you sit here and you know these people online, you know.
Right.
And I've met Mike a few times out in Kansas City, and, you know, I've met John Dorsey a bunch of times and Jason Hardung.
Right.
And in the Berkeley House, I had never met any of you people before. Of course, I've talked to you online, but I'd never met any
right,
of you people.
Right, yeah. That was,
and,
that was a fun experience, yeah.
Yeah, so it was, like, cool. I do it every day, and, like, you know, I take the act of doing it serious, you know, but I try not to take myself serious, you know, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah,
like,
I know. That's essential. You can't take yourself too fucking serious. Yeah.
But I take I when I'm sitting there working on it, I take it serious. I'm not just gonna say like I'm not into surreal kind of stuff like I used to be.
Right.
Like, I'm not gonna write something that says moon green, orange druid head, blue. Like, I'm not gonna do that. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying. But there's some people who are very adept at that and can do it and make it work. And there's others that are just
well, it's natural.
Just, there's others who just,
you
know,
natural for you.
What's that?
It's natural for them. You just got to find what's natural for you.
Right, right. There's some people who are very adept at that, you know. But there's others who you could tell this get those little poetry like magnets on their fridge and shit, mix them up, and toss them on the fridge and then write it down. But yeah, I know what you're saying, Frank. I really do. Yeah, I mean, I take it seriously too. When I write, you know, I'm serious. You know, I know a lot of people think I'm a big old goofball, but no, there's a very serious side to me. I think I'm going to cry now. No, just kidding. such a dick. But yeah, I know what you're saying, man. I get it. I do.
Well, it's just, you know, everybody's got people that like them and their work and stuff, and it's
right.
The only thing I know how to do. Like, you know, I'm like
I'm like kind of like Corky-ish and everything else, like, you know. I just like, you know, when you put a video camera in my hands to like make a movie, it will be all shaky. And same with photography. And I love music. I listen to it all the time, but I can't play a lick of it, like, you know. And all I've been able to do in my life is like tell stories. And
right.
And, you know, and it sucks when you get amongst, like, a group of poets and they're just like, well, you kind of, like, sound like you're ripping this person off or whatever. Like, dude, if you grew up in my life, then that was my life. Like, you know, I grew up, part of my life was in Boston among a bunch of drunks. Like, you know, what else am I supposed to, you know? Because it's a journey. You've got to chip away at, you've got to chip away at the past. Get to the present, like, you know, and that, at least with poetry, that is, but that's how I see it.
Yeah, you know, I get tired of the whole, what the fuck's going on, someone, like, flushing a toilet? I get tired of the whole Bukowski comparison, you know, if you write anything about alcohol and chicks or, you know, getting laid, people, like, immediately label you, oh, you're a Bukowski ripoff, you know, and that's bullshit, you know.
It's
kind of a universal experience, you know.
If he was the first guy to write about... Go ahead.
How many, like, drunken chick poems do you get in the mail, you know?
Do I get my mail? Well, you know...
But, like, if he was the first guy to drink... and fuck chicks, then, you know, whatever, because that type of poetry goes back to the 12th century.
Absolutely,
you know? So,
but
I mean...
Bukowski just got famous for it, and then other people like to label you as a ripoff of Bukowski if you write anything even remotely similar. You know?
Well, Bukowski ripped off Celine. He ripped off John Fante and New Hampton, and, you know, I think Mather Schneider... said something like there's nothing original anymore, and in many ways I can agree with that, other than if you can tell your own stories, that's original, because no one else has lived your stories, you know, so, or your experiences, you know, it's about as best as you can get it, like, you know, that's the way
What's funny is I've had some pretty crazy and wild experiences, and I write about them, and I don't think people believe them, they think it's fiction. Not. So that kind of cracks me up, I guess, a bit. But I'm glad, you know, I'm glad I got all that, you know, sowed all my wild oats, you know, before I had kids or anything, you know, because I'd be fucked up right now if, you know, I hadn't. And big time. But, yeah, you know, I have tons of stories, you know, they're written. I just, you know, I'm very selective about where I submit my work and all that. And I think it comes from the fact that I've been, you know, a publisher for so long and all that, and I've seen stuff coming in and going out. And so it's like I'm really leery of where I send my own personal stuff, you know.
Once you get to be an editor, you start to think like an editor.
Yeah, I think so. And it's kind of bad. It's like, you know, I should just...
Yeah, I know.
At the same time, I don't want to, like, you know, shotgun my shit out to, like, 20,000 different little lit zines, you know, because I hate to say it, but there's so many of them that come and go. They come and go so quick, you know. They pop up. They're hot. They're hot for, like, a couple months or 2-3 months, you know, and then they're gone. You know, just gone. I hate to say that, and I hate that that happens, but it's a reality.
Do that.
But it's also important.
You know how much work it is, you know.
I think it's also important to challenge yourself. Like, you know, say that you're writing, I don't know, say you just wrote 10 prose or narrative type poems. I think it's important to challenge yourself and try other things. Like, I'm not saying run out there and be a Charles Olson or something, but, like, you know, maybe try like something a little more lyrical or something a bit more long lined. And in the Nirvana Haymaker, though, that there's like half of it is narrative, I do throw a lot of language poems because I do have influences that come from like Robert Creeley or something like that. And, you know, like everybody, music, art, any kind of art is influenced by something. Like, you know, I think.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I agree. Yeah. I wish I could play an instrument. I have been. What did
you play the skin flute? You play the skin flute often.
Oh yes, I'm very adept at the skin flute. Let me tell you. If only I could do it publicly on stage, I'd be a motherfucking celebrity.
You would have got fucking arrested.
Exactly, when I get arrested.
You offended the old ladies in the crowd in your Depends undergarments. I'll never forget. Who's that one girl you offended? That Cassandra Daylit or whatever her name is.
I think she and I were cool. I don't think I really did. You know. But you know.
You pissing people off again.
It just comes natural to me. I tend to always rub someone the wrong way, even though I want to rub them the right way and make them ejaculate. Seriously, though, you know, what's funny is you mentioned, you know, being able to play an instrument. I have been looking into getting a ukulele, actually. Because I think I might, you know, it's just like three strings or something like that. I think I might be able to figure that out and do something productive with it and add it to my show. But I'm serious about it, though. Seriously, I envy people who can, you know, who are musically inclined or, you know, good painters, like Hardong and all that. What's that?
I used to scream in a punk rock band. I wasn't very musically inclined, though.
Well, Brian Fugier, y'all, time has run out.
Yeah, we're in the archive.
Yeah, the archive is about to go away.
15 minutes of fame is done.
Yes.
It's been fun, guys. Thanks a lot, you know, Frank, for having me on, man. I appreciate it. I really do. You know what, Mr. Grover, thanks for calling in, buddy, and being a part of it. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for putting up with me, guys.
And Mr. Grover, no problem. Yeah, Mr. Grover is my kid's uncle. He's Uncle Grover. My daughter scored, three touchdowns this weekend at a big tournament at Paul Brown Stadium.
That's my niece, man.
That's right. I saw that. Yeah. But yeah, thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me on, man. It's been fun. You know, it feels like a pajama party here, just, you know, hanging out with you guys on the phone.
Next time we'll do each other's nails.
I actually had my nails done in Albuquerque.
I saw that. You're
blue.
Your nails painted. On the train. I thought you fell asleep and Michelle painted him.
Yeah, I'm a pretty boy. All right, Frank, you got to wrap it up, buddy. I understand.
Yeah.
It's been great.
All right.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
That was Brian Fugier, the man behind Zygote, my coffee, and many other crazy things. Good. It's important to not take yourself too seriously sometimes. Next week, our guest is the awesome Bill Gaynor. You don't want to miss that show. What the fuck ever.